You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of January 1st, 2020. It's a new year, but we're still thinking about the best games of 2019.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboy.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And we took a week off to visit Santa, but we're back.
We did. Yeah, we played some video games with Santa. He's really good at Smash, little known fact.
Weirdly.
Who would Santa main in Smash Brothers?
I was gonna ask that exact same question. I was going to posit King K. Rool.
I was actually going to say the exact same thing. It's because of the belly, right? It has to be because of the belly. Yeah,
bowl full, like it jiggles like a bowl full of jelly.
What if he's just like Fox and he's just insanely good? He's just like wiping the floor. You know the elves can't even like play. You know what I mean? They have to like throw the match.
They do like a 7-on-1 novelty match.
Yeah, they're all Luigi.
We did the gamies last time. This week we are going to do our games of the year.
Yes.
And as a reminder, we pick three games, we talk about them for a little bit, and then we actually hold any of the leftover games. You know, if we were to have expanded this list to each of our top five or our top 10, we then do that in a subsequent episode. So yep. This is where we make the tough cuts and pick three of our favorites.
And I want to establish, I want to have a little brief conversation, an aside, before we get into our lists. Because, you know, we talk about this all of the time, but I think this was one of the hardest years I could remember to decide what my top three were. Yeah. And not because there was a slew of good games. I honestly think this is one of the most disappointing years for video games in recent memory.
Ooh.
I don't think on many of the games that are, I would actually say, every single one of the games on my list would probably have not been on my list in any of the previous years, with maybe like one exception.
Okay.
I don't think this year has been great from my perspective. Hmm. And I've played some of the games that people really liked, and we'll talk about those in leftovers as well. But there's just a variety of games that I think I thought were going to be better than they actually were, or I tried to love, or things were delayed this year that I think people were surprised that they were delayed. We talked about how it's a weird year before game consoles. I don't want to go into this with people thinking that my top three games are the absolute best games. You got to play these this year, because I don't necessarily think that's the case. Mm-hmm. And two, I don't necessarily think some of the things that were not on my list are that much worse than these ones. But all that is to say, none of them were that good. If that makes sense.
So this has been a slump for you. This is like just been an off year. Yeah,
I don't know what it is, man. Yeah. Like, I just don't think that there's been a whole lot of games this year that I've been like, this is the one. This is the game that really triggers my GOTY nomination. Yeah. And you know, we've talked about it in the past, and we'll talk about it again, I'm sure. But some of the reasons why a game will appear on my Game of the Year list to begin with is because it fills me with awe or wonder, or makes me optimistic for what's to come. And pretty much all of the games on my list do that in some parts, but then in a lot of other parts don't. So,
right. I actually feel similarly, but I attribute it to a less pessimistic viewpoint. I will say from what I'm hearing though, like, you know, we experience the same thing. I think one just industrial reason is that we're in this weird hardware transition year where we know a lot of stuff is going to get pushed to straddle the line between PS5 and PS4. And we know some things are going to get pushed off to, you know, just fully make use of the next systems. We know it's a weird transitional time in terms of cloud gaming. I mean, I feel like this always kind of happens where there are years where things get pushed off to the next big round of releases. Yep. And I think we're there. For me, I think, I also think this is one of the years where every single game that I pick is actually much more personal, in that these are what I found to be the most rewarding games of the year, but I couldn't recommend them without qualifications to other people in the way that I could recommend, hey, everyone should play Breath of the Wild.
Right. You know? Yeah, exactly.
I can say that without any equivocation, but all three of the games that I'm going to pick, I could completely see why someone wouldn't necessarily like them.
Yeah. And of course, we should, you know, required up front, we have not played all of the games that came out this year.
Yes. Obviously. There is one major, major hole in my to-do list that I feel like may have changed the list, but I just didn't get to play it. Interesting. And we can talk about that later.
All right. Well, should we start us off then? Our number number three. Who wants to go first?
Why don't you go first?
I'll go first. Okay. My number three, and man, I thought about this one a lot.
Uh-huh.
It's Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
It seems fate still doesn't want you dead.
I was really wondering if this is going to make it or not.
I should say, we like to do this, right? Like, predict how many? I think you and I will have exactly one game overlap.
Yes. I think I was going to say one to two. I think it will probably be one.
All right. Well, Sekiro. Okay. Yeah. Look, I have a lot of disappointment and anger and animosity at Sekiro because I love the Bloodborne and Darkborn, Blood Souls.
Darkborn.
What do people Blood say? Souls, yeah. Blood Darkborn.
I believe the Blood term Souls. You're searching for is Strand Game.
Soulsborn is the term. Why did I say Dark Blood? I love the Soulsborn series with such a fiery passion, a fire that must be rekindled.
Yeah, every... a fire that brings you back from the dead.
Yes. Like, I love the series so much, and it's really hard to overstate my passion for that series. And so I went into Sekiro with a lot of high expectations that were quickly dashed, I think, by some of the, in my opinion, the most egregious, poorly designed boss battles that the Soulsborne series has ever seen.
Right.
I think that the ending of the game is an absolute failure, and I think that the game is inaccessible and mean in a way that the Soulsborne series has never been.
Hmm.
That being said, it's still a Soulsborne game, and it still had created some of the most memorable, heart-pounding, triumphant moments of a video game all year long. And I have to, at the same time, respect and appreciate Sekiro for trying that, right? I think especially the first third of the game is incredible. I think the fight with the old man, old man hawk or eagle or whatever, is incredible. One of the best fights in all of the Bloodborne series. When I finally defeated the lady in the beginning, in the first part where you go into a flashback scene,
it's the butterfly.
Lady Butterfly. Mm-hmm. That was an exhilarating moment. One of the hardest boss fights I'd experienced in a while, but I think really well designed, very atmospheric, very, very cool. I think the boss fights that they added as like sort of mid-game boss fights were equally exhilarating and used a great use of the landscape in a way that the normal boss fights in the Soulsborne series didn't have.
Right.
The video of me beating the boss that's riding a horse, I had such a fucking clean, so clean, Scott, boss fight against him that I felt like a god, and it just felt so good. And in those bright, shining moments, I think Sekiro really does live up to some of the best that the Soulsborne series has to offer. So I made it on my list precisely because it was still doing things that, despite that we're in a state where it's so clear that Dark Souls has been so influential across games. I still don't think anybody does it as good as FromSoft. And I think that's on display in Sekiro. I think their biggest enemy is themselves. And I think that has shown to be true in Shadows Die Twice. But when they're on the ball, they're on the ball. And I think it's still a really solid experience.
I echo all of that stuff. I mean, I would say, since you played all of it, you're the authority here. But my experience was exactly the same, which is eventually why I stopped playing it, where I hit that point where I think the way you articulated it, it was not, there's a fine line between being stern and being mean, and Dark Souls is stern, but Sekiro is just mean. And it's like, okay, I don't need to deal with this.
If the Soulsborne series was main cast of hosts from the Great British Bake Off, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice would be Paul Hollywood, you know? Whereas I think Bloodborne is more, I don't know, Sue, I guess.
I mean, there's a lot to like. I mean, I remember one of my favorite portions that I played was the serpent, where you're going the big canyon, and you're running / hiding from this huge serpent, which was just a level of action that I had never seen in one of those types of games, but it was done with definitely a flair that the From Software games have. But it wasn't enough to grab me. It did not make my top three, so which was kind of a surprise.
No surprise. And I don't think it was on a lot of people's top lists. I think precisely because it did fall short in that
except
way.
For the Game Awards.
Oh, was it number one? Did it win the Game Awards?
I'm pretty sure it won the Game Awards.
Oh, I did not pay attention to that. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. Interesting. Wow, weird. Okay, well, there's my number three.
Okay, my number three. This one is one that I went back and forth a lot, but I searched my heart of hearts and I knew it to be true. My number three is Control.
I'd like to tell you about a dream I had last night. In my dream, the Hiss had broken free of this prison, this house. At first, many people thought it was horrifying. But also, many people wanted to welcome the Hiss in. Funny. That's all I can remember of that dream.
Oh, Scott, come on.
I mean,
I thought you might have Control on your list, and I was like, would he though?
Okay, so aside from the Ashtray Maze, which I'll talk about in a second.
Sure.
There weren't many games this year where let's do a separate medium. Some years your favorite game, your favorite movie is a Marvel movie.
Correct.
And it's not a indie darling. It's not a huge, you know, it's not a intimate artistic statement. It's not pushing the medium forward necessarily. It's just a polished, fun, bombastic thing that propelled you through the work that you were consuming. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's Control. I mean, it's a highly polished AAA video game that isn't necessarily doing anything different with the medium or pushing it forward, but I had such a good time with it, and I really clicked in with all of the mechanics in a way where people are always after that thing where it's kind of like, I know you didn't have the same experience with it, but I had a similar experience with Control that I had playing the, 2016 Doom remake?
Oh yeah.
Where there was a certain, there was a kineticism, a kinetic quality to the battle where I just kept moving. I wasn't camping behind walls. And I think part of this was just how we respectively spec'd our characters.
Yeah.
But I just had this, it was great. I had this very flowing combat style that went through the whole game. I appreciated even though it was definitely derivative of many other things, I actually liked the setting and the story quite a bit, because you don't really see that stuff in video games all that often, even though you do see it in other media. And I just had a really good time with the game, and I was like, you know what? I should embrace that, even though it's not necessarily the, it's not the academic choice, but it was something that I truly enjoyed.
I mean, I can appreciate that. I still think that the sequences where you are trying to find one of the sort of magical objects that warps reality in some interesting way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the fact that anytime you open up a new sector and you go in it, who fucking knows what's there? Like, it could be anything, because the space is so surreal. Like, there's one room that looks like an office space that is then just pushed back further and further and further, and you can go into it, and you can just walk through it, you know? Like, it is just literally one room that has been duplicated and pushed out like 8 to 10 different layers, you know? Yeah. And that kind of encounter is something you find all of the time in Control. And it's really neat that it's like you open a door, who knows what's in there, you know? It's inventive and clever and new. And I could see why a lot of people would think it's pretty fresh. And also, it did appear on a lot of people's Games of the Year list as well. So I think it did get a good amount of recognition.
Yeah. And then this is just one of those things where it just bums me out that you did not have the same experience with it. But the other day, I listened to the song from the Ashtray Maze, and I was
The metal song?
Yeah, the metal song. And I was like, oh, wow. Clearly this has to be on my top three, because I just got so pumped listening to it. I was like, I went through that entire sequence, and that whole, the way that they time it with the slowdowns of the songs, they do some really clever things with like looping the track if you're taking too long. Yep. I went through in a single shot, you know, there was no break to the action. And I was like, man, what an amazing sequence that was.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough, Scott. Fair enough.
I really wish it was different, because
if I were a metalhead, maybe that's the problem, is I do not appreciate metal enough.
I think if you are into metal, or if you're into like prog rock, if you like Rush, or if you like Metallica when you were a kid, that's just that song is a combination of those two things, and it's just really hard. Not, I mean, that song sounds kind of like a Tenacious D song, except they're serious about it.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, that's not why I listen to Tenacious D.
I guess that's right.
All right.
All right, what's number two,
shall I? All right, my number two is Outer Worlds.
Look who it is. The stranger that came out of nowhere and now has everyone talking. Some people want you to be a savior. A shining beacon of hope. Those people clearly haven't met you yet.
So I actually finished this game yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of sealed the deal for me. And I did not expect this game to be on my list. Uh-huh. And the more that I thought about it, the more I felt like it deserved a spot. Hmm. And the reason is not because it fills me with a sense of awe or accomplishes some sort of new fantastic rhythmic form of play. Like, that's not what this game is offering. Mm. What Outer Worlds offers is a Fallout-esque RPG in space that is more accessible than any Fallout series has been to date. Yeah. I would say has some of the strongest writing and just does its thing to the best of its ability. And I think for that reason, it feels like it's kind of like honoring the most efficient worker in the office or something, you know? Like, it's not flashy, it's not gonna blow you away, even though I do think it's a very pretty game, but I think the writing is just super strong, and the quality of life elements that are put into the game are really thoughtful. I think it's designed in a way that lets people who are very into RPGs and really into min-maxing and want to spike their own difficulty, they can really get into it and spec out and play intelligently. They can order their, you know, their companions around in battle really intelligently and spec out to do that. Like, there's just a lot of room, and there's a lot of respect for the player in a way that I think generally this year I've seen less of than in past years. And I just felt like a need to honor and respect that this year, you know? Like, look, you don't have to be flashy, but if you make a game with a lot of care and you make it polished and you make it considerate of the player, I feel like you deserve to be on someone's top three games of the year yeah. list, you know? Like, if nothing else, Outer Worlds has great writing that doesn't sacrifice it in pursuit of more complicated bullshit systems. It just does what you expect it to, and it does it very, very well.
I played a very little bit of this game, and I probably will play a little bit more before all is said and done. But one of the things that I admired about it was, from reading a little bit about it after I started playing, was that you can make one of these games and not have to make it this bloated, sprawling Skyrim-esque yes. thing, which I liked it quite a bit, where you can have a density of systems, but it doesn't, you're not measuring the worth in terms of how long can you keep those systems going, because you're measuring it in what can they do to tell this story and to give the player an interesting deep storyline versus a sprawling yep. storyline. And I thought that was a really cool proof of concept, where you could say, okay, great, maybe, you know, we can make more of these types of games that have Fallout-esque characteristics, but it doesn't take a million hours to play them, where only 10% of the stuff is going to be great questline anyway. Let's just yes. cut it down so, you know, 80% is great, you know?
Yep. And I think the result is a game that's so much sharper, you know? And yeah. this game leans so heavily on, like, anti-capitalist corporate satire.
Yeah.
And I think that if this game were longer, that would become very grating. Like, yes. case in point, I think the companions are some of the more interesting and well-written companions. They all have their own quest lines, with the exception of one robot on your ship named Sam, who's a cleaning robot. Mm-hmm. And you can talk to your companions, and when you're out in the wild, your companions will talk to each other. If you're hanging out with this robot, the robot will just be like, Sam is the top-notch cleaner in all of Halcyon. Like, and they never stop with that joke. And at the very end of the game, you're going through, there's a moment where you're going through your crew, asking them, like, you know, what are your thoughts on the last impending battle that you're about to take, and yeah. it goes one by one, and each of them give their in-person reason of, like, why we think we should go on this, you know, one-way suicide mission. And then Sam goes like, my parameters are built to clean or whatever. Like, they never drop that joke. It's so right. consistent, and I love that. I think it's great that they managed to walk that line, and still, it's almost as though, like, let's think about how somebody writes a comedy or a comedy yeah. film, right? You write a fuck ton of jokes. You write a lot of jokes. And then you call down to the best, and you only put in the best, right? And that is how you make a good, sharp comedy. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of comedy films aren't 2.5 hours long. You know, they've yes. got yeah. 90 minutes or less runtime. Yeah. And if you look at Outer Worlds from that perspective as a comedy that focuses on quality writing, I think it makes a lot of sense that their systems aren't crazy complicated, yep. that the quest lines aren't insanely long. They're each their own and discrete, and it doesn't overstay its welcome, as all comedies should do.
Yeah, it's one of those things that even with its shorter runtime, I'm not sure if I'm going to see the end of it, but the stuff that I've read, and, you know, I've watched some people play through different spec types, and, like, how that differentiates even your dialogue choices and what you have, you know, to work with. Mm-hmm. I don't know, just it's an impressive game because of its restraint
yeah.
versus Skyrim is impressive because of its total lack of restraint.
The last thing I'll say also about Outer Worlds is, I think what I am always looking for when I'm looking at an RPG of this kind is the closest thing I can get to recreating the sense of intimacy and family that you feel when you play something like a BioWare RPG, specifically yeah. Dragon Age Inquisition and Mass Effect. Right. And I think this is probably the closest any non-BioWare company has come to that point yet. I haven't played Disco Elysium or some of the other RPGs this year, but it feels the closest to creating that sense of, like, being on a crew and having friends and hanging out with them through yeah. that writing of those companions. Right. And that's quite an accomplishment. Even if it doesn't achieve those same lofty heights, I think it's quite an accomplishment.
Cool. Well, congrats to a complete... Like, and we hadn't even really talked about it all on the podcast, too. So it was like
exactly.
complete, it's yeah. like a fun dark horse.
Yeah.
All right. My second?
Your second, number two.
All right. Ape Out.
We'll be right back.
I'm so glad you have this on your list, Scott. Yep. I almost had this on my list. We talked about it much earlier in the year, but fuck, man, Ape Out's really good, and everyone should play it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's such the opposite of one of those huge, sprawling AAA style games. It kind of brings me back to when the heyday of, you know, Xbox Live Arcade or whatever, like something that would just come out of nowhere. And I think there's kind of like a mini renaissance going on in the kind of well-known independent scene with the Switch and the types of exposure that can happen there. And it's just, what if we made a game where it was a top-down game where the main mechanics were grabbing people and throwing them against walls because you're a rampaging gorilla? Okay, great. Let's go with it.
I mean, look, I know that they're not one and the same, but I think that this is better than Untitled Goose Game in almost every way.
Oh, yeah,
and
for sure.
I don't think people are fully respecting that, because if you take that same basic premise, right?
Yep.
What if you were an animal and the interactions were limited to what that animal could do? Make a game. Like, I could easily see both Untitled Goose Game and Ape Out coming out of the same game jam.
Yep. Right?
I think Ape Out.
Animal Jam.
your Animal Jam, whatever, right? Like, I think that Ape Out is a more compelling game minute to minute. It's very different, so I know that's an unfair comparison. And I think the score and the way that the score aligns with what you're doing while through play, I really like Untitled Goose Game in that respect, but I think Ape Out, no game this year holds a candle to Ape Out, and it's really impressive jazz score as you actually experience it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ape Out is probably a victim of, one, it came out super early in the year, and for better or worse, a lot of times those games kind of get forgotten. Two, and this is no knock against Untitled Goose Game, but Untitled Goose Game is just more memeable.
Yep, for sure.
It just, for whatever reason, it caught that internet fire. And
I mean, we've all hung out with asshole geese, but how many of us have hung out with life-threatening apes? You know,
I mean, it's just and I think there's also just kind of a stylistic. I mean. And also, like, there's an upfront skill curve to Ape Out that gradually ramps up in Goose Game that I think can lull people into it a little bit more. But I was much happier playing Ape Out, and I enjoyed Goose Game quite a bit. But just the way that the arcadey nature of it, the design of it is just magnificent. I mean, it's so tailored to the style that it's going for. It integrates the way that the death scene integrates the path that you took through the level into the letters that shows in the game over screen.
Oh yeah.
Even
so
down
cool.
to the very end. I mean, it comes to a conclusion with a really cool thematic thing that also adds a new wrinkle to the final level that, while you've never seen it before, is completely logical to the game and works very well in the context of both the story and the mechanics of the video game.
Yep, for sure. I really like Ape Out.
Yeah. I mean, and again, the music, I think if I knew more about music and was more, you know, musically proficient, I'm sure I would be even more impressed, but the dynamic score and what they do with the kind of AI drum machine that is powering most of the soundtrack, I think is just extremely cool. It's like, I haven't heard anything like that before.
I'm sad that I have not seen Ape Out on almost any end of the game of the year game list. And I know if I made a top 10, Ape Out would absolutely be on the top 10. And I'm not quite sure why. I strongly suspect it just people missed it. Maybe or forgot about it because it came out so much earlier in the year than a lot of the other titles that people are topping their lists. But it's kind of surprising because I actually think as a sort of indie game goes, it's one of the best this year for sure.
I mean, the level of polish on it, just in terms of the style and the feel of the game, is, I mean, it's the level, when you think about the totally subjective nature of polish, I think Ape Out is probably one of the most polished games of the entire year of any budget, of any size, including things like Control or The Outer Wilds or anything.
Sure, Control.
I mean, there's a level of exactness to the themes and the controls that are pretty much unmatched for, you know, most other games out there.
Yep. Super cool.
All right.
All right.
What's number one for you?
Number one. My number one. And I'm going to go ahead and say it's also your number one. Maybe. Uh-huh. We'll see. And that is Death Stranding.
Hell yeah. All right, let's get into it.
What does America mean to you? Way my dad made it sound, we were something special. The glue that held it all together. More than a nation. A symbol of freedom and hope. We could bring it all back if we kept on making deliveries and connecting people. He was sure of it.
I didn't want this on my list, okay? I tried really hard. In some early iterations, this was number two on my list instead of number one.
Yep.
But look, are you familiar with the game Hearts?
You mean the card game?
The card game, Hearts, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there, if anyone is listening...
you mean like Kingdom Hearts, that one?
if you're not familiar with the game of Hearts, there's this thing called shooting the moon, right? Mm. And in order to shoot the moon, you basically have to do all of the things that you're not supposed to do, right? Which is taking points, because the game is, you're meant to have as least few points as possible. Your goal is to take as many points as you can. And if you take all the points, then actually you don't get any and everybody else gets some, right? To me, Death Stranding is Kojima trying to shoot the moon, right? He's taking all of these ideas that I think if you were to sit in a room with the normal user testing allotment of gamers, you would not get good results, right? You would get a game that's just a fetch quest. You'd get a game that's just trying to be a movie. You would get a game that's too emotional. You'd get a game that's not emotional enough. You'd get a game that's pretty but vacuous. You'd get a game that's ugly because there's not enough environmental changes, right? Like, there's a lot of things on paper that do not make sense. But I think that Kojima happens to put everything together in a way that makes some kind of a brilliant mind madness make sense. Like, he makes it work, I think, in a way that is kind of unparalleled.
Yes.
And I felt obligated to put it as my number one because no one else this year even fucking tried. Like, I just do not think that there's a single game that came out this year that is as brave or takes as many risks, budget aside, like anything aside. Like, even if this game was a cheap top, someone even made a top down what Death Stranding would look like if it came out in 1992 or whatever, or came out on a PlayStation 2. That game could exist and could exist very similar to this game as it does today, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that the budget, the degree of like acting or cinematograph the sort of cinematics that you see of which you see a lot, like, are the ones that are carrying this game through. I really don't think that's the case. I really think that it's that when he puts everything together, it just kind of works. And it's impressive, and it's hard not to want to honor that, you know?
Yep. I mean, I guess this is kind of, I mean, this is taking a little bit of the steam out of our inevitable debrief for this, but we won't go into too many spoilers, which is maybe the allure here. But I mean, it's hard not to sound like a pretentious asshole, but
Scott, I mean, we're 530 episodes in. At this point, it's pretty clear we're pretentious assholes.
Yeah, I guess that ship has sailed quite some time ago, but this game is a masterpiece.
I agree 100%.
I mean...
Do you remember, what, like 10 episodes ago, I was like, that game's going to suck. It's not going to be good. Yeah.
I mean, this... there's really no other word for it. I mean, just from a personal accomplishment for Kojima's career to a game that truly challenges what the medium is all about.
Yes, yeah.
I mean... And I think it's weirdly enough, it goes back to whether you like him or dislike him, Kojima is a supremely inventive game developer.
Yep.
And the level of detail that he brings to his games. I mean, I think he's one of the few auteurs that we have in the huge kind of big budget space where the level of detail that he brings to his games, but also the level of experimentation is mind-blowing.
Absolutely.
The fact that this game was made and came out in the state that it came out in is incredible, both mechanically and thematically. Every single thing in this game, I was to the very end, I was like, I cannot believe this game was made.
Yeah, for sure. Even like as the credits are rolling, you're like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me give you an anecdote of when I knew that this was going to be my game of the year.
Sure.
It was during that kind of the middle to last third of the game where you go through this really long sequence of having to do some pretty hard deliveries through the mountains.
Yep.
And in the mountains, the time fall is even worse because everyone knows snow time fall is even worse than rain time fall.
Of course, yeah.
Duh. You are cut off from some of the powers that you have, and so you're at a handicap there. But I was feeling pretty confident. I had to make this delivery, and I saw, I was like, oh, okay, you know what? This secondary delivery is not too far out of my way to get to this main delivery. So I think I can do two. I can swing by this optional one and still have enough time and resources, and I'll get more bonus. So I'll just do two of them in one.
Yep.
And then I mapped out my route very carefully on the map. I put a few waypoints down to keep me on track. And then I set out. And I realized that I did not pay attention to the topology of the map as I was playing this out.
You fool!
Because I was like, oh man, this mountain is way steeper than I thought, and this is not good. And then a fucking blizzard happened, and I was like, oh no, this is terrible. Yep. And so I was like, okay, everything's falling apart. My stamina is depleting by the second. I set up a timefall shelter to both restore the integrity of my deliveries and also prevent me from dying and like let me catch my breath. And then I realized that, you know, half of my stuff is degraded, you know, one of my power suits is gone. I can barely climb up this mountain without fully depleting my strength, which means that you start sliding down the mountain. And so I then go about like 20 to 30 feet and have to set up another timefall shelter. And it's like, fuck, okay, I'm almost to the crest of this mountain. And it's just so depressing. It's kind of like when you read about those people who like climb huge mountains and like, you know, they spend the entire day just like going a half a mile or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you get to the top and you just see another mountain.
Yeah, it's like, fuck. Like, and so I set up another timefall shelter like in eye line of my other one that I just set up. I was like, this is stupid. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to make the final push. I go. I trip over a rock. I realize that my gloves are fucked up, so I can't like pick myself up very carefully. I start tumbling all the way down the mountain. I manage to catch myself, but then I realize that all the shit on my backpack has fallen off, and I watch it as it tumbles all the way down to the bottom of the mountain.
Oh, no.
and then
from where you came.
Yeah, from where I came, and I could just see the critical quest items, and my hubris, you know, I thought I could do the critical ones and the optional ones, and I just see all of them down there. I'm like, and as I'm watching them careen down the mountain and like towards the very foot of the mountain where I came from, I think to myself, this is my game of the year.
I did it.
That fucking emergent story of just like how arrogant and how ill-prepared I was for the fucking weather, and like, the most deadly parts of Death Stranding were not even the fucking ghosts or anything. It was just me being unprepared for a hike that I thought I was prepared for.
There was the
clincher.
There's a moment similar late in the game when you're basically given an opportunity or a task that will take you through much of the world.
Yeah.
And you're sort of forced to consider all of the progress that you've made in transforming the world and all of the progress that others have also made.
Yes.
You know, and there are moments that even happen earlier in the game, but those ones in my mind are the most poignant when you find someone's item right when you needed it most.
Yes.
Or you find something that you left behind, right? And you think about like, man, all of the man hours, all of the work that got put into it, I'm reaping the benefits now. And it's like that collective journey for us to build that together that brought us here. And we make fun of the term strand game, but like if you take it at face value, this is a strand game, and it really does feel like an experience that in a way the parts of the game that feel like you can even the meta ones, the fourth wall breaking ones, yep, are almost like Kojima reminding you that he's there too, that he's playing a part in building this experience right along, yep, with you. He gave you these systems, and then it was all of these other people that you're playing with together that sort of built the world, and you that built the world, because I was the one that decided when to invest in roads and when to put battery rechargers and where to leave my vehicles and where to stash things. And other people decided where to build their little bases in the middle of nowhere so I can rest for once. Or people, yep, like you built Timefall shelters so that I could rest when I needed to, right? Like,
yep.
It's like, oh, what, you know, how come these, the two footsteps in the snow go away and there's only one? Like, that's when Kojima was carrying you, Scott. You know, like, it's those moments to me that really do capture why I choose to put games on the top of my list anyway, right? Which is to fill me with awe and wonder and do something that's different and makes me optimistic for what games can do in the coming years. And it's impressive to me that I think that some of that is evident early on, but despite knowing that very few people would probably ever finish this game, I think it really hits home in the last, you know, set handful of missions, really. Yeah. The last several hours. I mean, it's probably like the last 7 hours of Death Stranding, but I think he knocks it out of the park with that kind of message, you know? Yep. So,
I mean, I also think that there is, it would be so interesting if this game came out in the same way that that Demon's Souls came out, where it didn't have the baggage of this auteur behind it or this high profile developer or years and years of hype, because it is, in the same way that Demon's Souls was, a pretty experimental game. I mean, also a Strand game. I mean, I don't know. It's a lot of the weird criticism around this game, I think, is probably inextricably and maybe even understandably tied up in how people feel about Kojima, period.
Yep.
And agreed. I'm usually, you know, over the years, I have actually gotten more and more critical of the, like, separate the artist from the art type of mentality. But in this case, because it's not about him mistreating people, it's truly about his personality versus the art.
Correct. Yep.
I would be very interested to see if people didn't know that this was from him, how they would actually feel about it. Because I think this game does a lot of things that, if you just look at it, without the weirdness of Kojima Productions behind it, people are always looking to experiment with, like, how do we actually connect with players across games? What is a multiplayer game that isn't explicitly about, like, shooting people? You know,
yep.
What happens if you create a world that is actually about traversing the world versus, you know, killing enemies in the world? There's just a lot of different things that this game does. And then on top of it, I actually think, we'll go into this in our spoiler cast, but I actually think that some of the story beats in this game are less egregious and ridiculous than even things you'd find in Metal Gear or any other games out there.
100%, yeah.
They're just presented in a way, they're presented in a context of a game that is itself absurd because of the level of crazy sci-fi that it is. And they're presented in the context of it coming from Kojima, and there's just a lot of baggage. I mean,
agreed.
You know,
yeah.
There's just a lot of stuff here. But if you take it in a vacuum, to say nothing of the performances, which I think I'm so excited to talk about some of the performances. Like, there are some performances in this game that I was like, man, this is one of the best performances I've seen, period.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I watch a lot of movies, and yeah, I totally agree. Like, so, I mean, not to jump on your train and derail it a little bit, but to the point about Kojima having creative control and the sort of perceptions that people bring to the game, knowing Kojima's tied to it.
Yeah.
I also think that it's so obvious once you've played through this game that it's not just a Kojima game, right? Like, he's clearly, yeah, working with a lot of other people and he's putting his name front and center, but you'd be crazy to think that he didn't get any sort of consultation on the script from his good friends Guillermo del Toro or Nicholas, yes, Winding Refn, who, yep, by the way, both Guillermo and Nicholas Winding Refn give excellent performances as these, yep, characters with lots of dialogue. Like, they are not, yep, side characters. They are fundamental to the game.
Right.
I think Rebecca Qualley's performance as Mama is fantastic.
Yep.
And honestly, some of her best work. Like, I think she's great in The Leftovers, but I think she's a phenomenal actress. And I wouldn't, yep, be the least bit surprised if, you know, he in a lot of ways, when we talk about actor performances or film performances generally. Like, even if we can respect people like, you know, auteurs like, you know, I don't know. I mean, Michael Bay comes to mind, but maybe that's a bad example. Scorsese, right? Scorsese is the classic auteur example. You know, they have longtime collaborators who weigh in on their decisions and provide a lot of feedback. And the actors that we see as their muses are partially their muses because the performances that they get are collaborative, right? It's not just that, oh, Scorsese happens to really like, what's his face? Leonardo DiCaprio, right?
Yes.
In the same way, I don't think it's just, this isn't just Kojima trying to shoehorn his friends in to cut them a piece of the paycheck in the way that Kerry Russell is forced into the new Star Wars movie. That film sucks, don't at me. In that way, like, I think this really is a much more collaborative experience, and I think you can see that once you really experience the entirety of the game, because you get to see these really much longer arcs and really interesting stories and excellent performances from characters that I think in the first few hours seem like they might just be giving you fetch quests, when that's, I really don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Everything about it, from the technical accomplishments, you know, to, because part of their performances were made possible by the level of care that they put into the motion capture and the performance capture, to, you know, the script, while, you know, clunky in some parts, of course, when it counts, it comes through.
Yep.
To the actual mechanics of the game and the intricacies of something even so simple as loading your backpack.
Yep.
There's just so much to this game, and I really think it's extremely divisive. I understand it, and I would totally understand why someone would look at it and be like, nope, or, you know, would see some of the performances and be like, thanks, but I don't like anime. but I mean, I don't know. It makes you sound like a weird zealot, but there are not many games like this.
Yep.
And this is the type of game that pushes the medium forward. Yeah.
I mean, with the one exception being Monster Energy Drink, I think this game is pretty flawless, you know?
Yeah. Man, what a crazy year. What a crazy end to that Odyssey, by the way.
Absolutely. Because I literally said this game was going to suck. I really did not think that he was going to nail it, you know?
I mean, to have something that I wanted to like this game, I fully came into it thinking that there's no way they can stick the landing to something like this.
I mean, you look at those trailers and there's a sense that it's everything in the kitchen sink, that it's a random assortment of ideas with no direction, but that's really not the case. I think certainly within the first half, you come to realize, like, this is fully formed. Like, these ideas have ends, you know, the messages that he's trying to say, he's not just like throwing it haphazardly around. You know, he's working on these individual story arcs that really do weave into a sort of larger story. I do think that there's some larger narrative beats that might miss a little bit towards the end. But I mean, for the most part, I really don't think that this is something that we can flippantly say, oh, that's just another weird Kojima game. You know, like, it really is a masterpiece.
Well, especially when... man, you said the magic word Star Wars, because I recently saw it too.
Oh God!
And I mean, I think what this game demands is that you're either completely in from the jump, or you just pull the ejection. You know, you just hit the ejection button like right away.
Yep.
Because if you start to explain this game to somebody, you sound like an insane person. But if you start from the beginning, they set up all this lore, they set up all the way the technology works and the way that the characters work and just the history of the world. And they do it in a way that's actually pretty cohesive. They stick to the rules pretty much the entire game. And the question is whether or not you want to suspend disbelief up front versus something like Star Wars, which is essentially a bait and switch, which is like, okay, I think this world makes a lot of sense. This is pretty, like, you know, it's fantastical, obviously, but like, it makes a lot of sense. And then it proceeds to change the rules about 100 times throughout the course of the even one movie.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, what the fuck, guys? Like, I can only go so far with you on this versus Death Stranding, where it sets up the rules early and then says, okay, you're either in with us or you're not, but yep. it's not going to change, you know?
Yeah, I think the best... I was trying to think of what a good comparison would be to other, like, film and media, because it's really easy to slip into a thing where it feels like it's a navel-gazy, like, oh, this is yes. like... This is like, you know, I don't know, some like weird navel-gazy art house French film by Jean-Luc yes. Godard or something, right? Yeah. Like, I don't think, I wouldn't compare it in that way. I think, if anything, it probably has more alike with, I don't know, maybe a good example would be something like Boyhood, which is like a Richard Linklater film that he shot over, I think, 12 years. Like, he yeah. used the same actor, starring a little kid who then grew into adulthood. And I actually do not like Boyhood. I don't think... I did not enjoy watching that film, but this, because it's 2019, people have been putting together the best, you know, top 10 films of the past decade, for example. And Boyhood's been on a lot of top film lists. Yes. And one of the reasons is because no one else has tried, you know, no one yeah. else has tried to do something of that scale who says, you know what, I want to tell a story about what it means to grow up and how our relationships change with the people in our lives. And I'm going to yep. do it in real time. I'm going to shoot yeah. this film over a decade. Right. And over a decade, technology changes. Like, you literally, yes. you might, the look of the film in the beginning might not look like the film at the end. And that's mind blowing to a lot of people. And it's crazy. And it's hard not to say, look, even if you don't like Boyhood, even if you're not a fan of Richard Linklater, that film is important to the medium
yep.
and to the past 10 years. And I think we'll be talking about Death Stranding in the same way in another decade, because I think it yep. really is that important. And man, who knows? Maybe we're wrong. Like, maybe in 10 years, everyone's going to be like, that game was fucking trash, and we're all in VR, and Strand Games are the new norm or whatever. Like, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm going to have to eat crow. But look, I've already eaten crow once before saying this game was going to suck, so clearly I can just get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty wild end to an extremely unusual year.
Yeah. And, you know, all that being said, I don't know if I would put, say, Breath of the Wild above this. You know, when thinking about like past games of the years, this right. is the one game I think on the list that probably would have been in my top three regardless.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one for me too. It's one of those all time. If you want to, like, I think it just says a lot about our personalities, what we look for in video games. I think this game, as many of his games are, is an acid test of what are you looking for in, yep. in the medium,
for sure.
And whereas I think like many of our other games that we even picked this year are complete opposites of that, where this is a mass appeal, whether it's Ape Out or The Outer Worlds or whatever. I would say that those games have a mass appeal that pretty much anyone would want, and Death Stranding is probably the most personal game in terms of what you get out of Death Stranding probably says a lot about what you think video games should be, period.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to leave it, especially ahead of our inevitable Death Stranding debrief.
Oh my god, yes.
Well, I'm glad we can right. get all this love and praise out of the way and like get into some of the nitty gritty spoiler stuff eventually.
Yeah, really get into, you know, from BBs to BTs to EEs. We're gonna cover everything. Cool. Well, we're happy to get through top games of the year. Again, we're going to do a little bit of an expanded list of games that didn't quite make yes. the top three in the coming week or two.
And I think that will be one of the more interesting conversations about the games this year, because I think yeah. the reason as to why there are a lot of games that are leftovers that would be higher but failed for one reason or another are right. are also super interesting.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess we'll leave it there for now. Happy to hear your thoughts on the year. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is the website. Come on down, bring your friends, listen to old podcasts, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone. All right. Until next week, everyone, thank you for listening.
Ciao. Because I